One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
All right, so Matt, we went to the library the other day and I found this book that I'd never seen before, and it was about anti-gravity, and I just couldn't put it down.
Good.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Man, I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
Other than being hot as blazes, I'm
I know, dude.
Fairly well.
It's ridiculous, but it's summer, so what are you going to do, you know?
That's right. We act like we're surprised.
Yeah, we'll be complaining about the heat now, and then in a few months, we'll be complaining about how cold it is. So we're just old cranky men, you know, just happens that way.
That's right. Next thing, we'll be talking about taking Metamucil and having had decent bowel movement in the last 3 days.
How my knees are hurting. And my glaucoma is acting up.
Yeah, I got glaucoma.
Yeah.
I got a card that says I have it. No, teasing. Anyway, I heard a really interesting fun fact yesterday.
All right.
And I thought, I got to remember to share this. It's nothing earth shattering. I just thought it was cool. So in the beginning of, in the intro to Gilligan's Island, okay, when you see the SS Minnow taking off from the harbor, okay, if you look closely in the background, the flag is at half mast.
Hmm.
Okay. And I've looked, I've verified this when I heard it, but it's because they filmed the intro for the show in the week following JFK's assassination.
And oh, wow.
All the flags were still at half mast.
Oh, wow.
I was like, well, that's kind of neat.
Yeah.
That somebody was able to pick up on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it's in the background, and they go, huh, well, I just noticed the flags at half mast when they leave, they leave for their
3 hour tour.
3 hour tour. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. It's funny that you came across that, because I, just a little while ago, I sent you those pictures. I was driving past the book depository where JFK was shot, and I sent you the pictures from that area. So, A weird synchronicity again.
I know. It's odd, isn't it?
So we want to say go check out the Podbelly Network at podbelly.com. You can go on there and find some different shows to listen to that you may not find anywhere else. Just go search for the list of shows they've gotten. You can find all the members of the Podbelly Network there. We're proud to be members of the Podbelly Network and to be associated with those shows. So go check them out at podbelly.com. We also want to thank tonight's sponsor, Care Of, and we will talk a little bit more about them later. While you're on the internet, go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. You can sign up to become a patron. You can get a bonus episode every week. Plus, if you're a $10 patron, you get the video versions of us recording these main episodes. So you get to see some stuff that I would normally cut out in the audio version. I leave it in for our patrons to kind of see when we mess up, how we mess up, and all that. So go over there and patreon.com/graveyardtales and sign up to become a patron. So, Matt, that's all I got. So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Okay, so tonight we are going to talk about another national park, but this time we're not going to talk about disappearances. We're going to talk about a haunting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with more than 150 documented paranormal events, many of them experienced by credible witnesses such as rangers and scientists and researchers, Mammoth Cave National Park easily qualifies for the title most haunted natural wonder of the world.
Yeah.
I love that. I love it.
It's a great title.
I mean, you know, it's impressive in and of itself, but you know, the fact that it could possibly be haunted is just a little bit cooler.
Oh yeah. And I can almost guarantee that most people, even if they've taken the tours, don't know it's haunted.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I mean, I've taken several tours. Cause I mean, Mammoth Cave is only about barely an hour and a half from me.
Mm-hmm.
So, they've been up there several times. And yeah, never once do I recall anyone mentioning that the caves were potentially haunted.
Yeah. It's not something they play off of. I think they've got so many other attractions there that they don't bring up the, oh, it's haunted, to get more people in. But
true enough. Yeah. I mean, there's, like I said, by itself, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So even without the added stories, you know, it is still an absolutely amazing place to visit.
Right. So we need to talk about why it's amazing. But first, want to say, go check our sources down in the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found this information. You can follow along in some parts and continue the research if you would like, because I know on mine, there was a lot of history and interesting facts and stuff, and I didn't get all of them because it would just have been a natural history podcast, which I'm sure some of y'all would enjoy, but we got to save room for the hauntings here too. So if you want to get more information, then go down to the bottom of our show notes and check our sources. Now, most of this first part actually comes from the National Park Service's information on Mammoth Cave and Mammoth Cave National Park. And like Matt was saying, they're both in Kentucky. Easy to get to, easy to find. Just Google search Mammoth Cave and you can get directions there. And it has actually been a national park for about 80 years at the time that we're recording this episode. It's been about 80 years. Now, if you're listening to this in the future, it will have been longer, but you know.
So you can do the math.
Yeah, you do the math. I'm not a math guy, so I don't math good. Now, Mammoth Cave National Park preserves the world's longest known cave system. Mammoth Cave is a limestone labyrinth with more than 400 miles of it explored. And it's not 400 miles in a straight line. This is 400 miles over three different levels. So you up and down and around and in and out and stuff. And the park actually estimates there's a potential for about 600 more miles in the system of caves. They just haven't explored those yet, which I think is fascinating. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's been a national park for 80 years, and there's still 600 miles that they have not explored, mapped, or anything. That's just fascinating to me. Now, in addition to that, there's over 200 caves in the park that exist as disconnected fragments of the larger Mammoth Cave system. So another 200 caves that just, they're not connected to the main one. So mm-hmm. You wouldn't get there. You have to travel elsewhere in the park to find these caves, but there's 200 more caves. So this is just, it's a holy area full of holes in Kentucky.
Yeah.
So
it's like Swiss cheese.
Yeah, basically. It's just basically. Now, over 2 million people a year visit the park, and more than 500,000 of them take the cave tour, is what they say. So 500,000 people a year go through these caves, and very few of them know that it's haunted. They could be walking right next to a ghost and never know it. And like I said, Mammoth Cave is one of the world's longest known caves, and it's what's called a solution cave. Now, a solution cave forms when rainwater kind of seeps through the soil, and it picks up carbon dioxide, both from the air and the soil, and it forms a weak acid. Now, this acidic water will squeeze in the small cracks and layers of the bedrock, like limestone, which is most of Tennessee and Kentucky is limestone. And it will dissolve out these small channels in the rock for the water to flow through. Now, the water, as it dissolves these minerals in the limestone, over a long, long period of time, these channels will enlarge so that water can flow more freely. As it passes through, the passageways grow. So it's solution cave is pretty easy to figure out. The water, the acidic water, turns the minerals into a solution, washes them away, and you have holes in the ground, which are these caves. And that's also how the stalactites, stalagmites grow. As these minerals seep through, they may collect on the roof and the water will fall away, but the minerals stay and you get stalactites and all that kind of stuff. So that's how, when you go into these caves, you see these big, fascinating, like, looks like rock sculptures. And it's actually just from the mineral deposits there, which is fascinating to me. I would love to see it more, but like you and I were talking, Matt, I'm kind of claustrophobic in caves. I don't want to get stuck in caves, so I'm not going to go spelunking and squeezing through tiny areas, because I know my fat butt would get stuck in one of these things and not be able to get out. And I would end up like that one caver. It terribly sad. And it's what freaks me out. He was exploring a new cave, new areas, trying to slide through, and he got stuck and they couldn't get him out.
Right.
And they tried to like give him IV solutions through his ankle to keep him alive, but he passed away and he was just stuck there. And I fear that when I go into any underground anything. So unless it's big enough for me to turn circles in, I'm not squeezing through it. So
I'm kind of the same way.
Yeah. I'll leave that to somebody else and you can just send me pictures of it. It'll be great. Now, researchers have dated Mammoth Cave's rock beds to the Mississippian period. So the rock beds formed about 320 to 360 million years ago. However, the passages of Mammoth Cave didn't start to form until about 10 to 15 million years ago, when the streams and rivers that were flowing over the surface allowed the water to sink in and then form the solution cave like we talked about. Now, the highest passages formed up until about 2 million years ago, when research speculates that the ice age activity around that time had altered the amount of water that was flowing into the cave. So the remaining cave streams descended to lower levels of the cave. So basically the ice age and the freezing up of stuff changed the way the water flows, and it stopped creating these big caverns, but the underground water system did keep eroding away the lower levels. Now, there are currently five distinct levels of passageways within Mammoth Cave. These consist of four fossil levels and then the modern river level, which is the lowest level located over 300 feet beneath the surface. So again, that's what we were talking about. The river drifted lower and lower in the cave over time as it eroded away. And now 300 feet beneath the surface is where the current river level is. And the rest of them are what they consider fossil levels. So they're still there. You can still see them, but it's like the old remnants of where the river used to be flowing.
Mm-hmm.
The cave is actually still forming today as water moves downward through the large and small passages to reach the water table. And underground rivers continue to flow out of the cave and into the Green River. So in another 100, 200, 300 years, there might be even more passages, not just another 600 miles unexplored. It could be 800 miles, be 700 miles. Who knows? Now, the first human inhabitation of this area occurred around the year 10,000 BCE. And this was when prehistoric peoples were living and traveling through the woodlands and plains of what is today called Kentucky. They were able to utilize the fertile river valleys that stream through the state to help sustain themselves, while also continually following the supply of edible plants and animals as part of their nomadic hunter-gatherer lifestyle, this says. Now, around approximately 3000 BCE, those prehistoric peoples discovered the cave, which they sometimes said they used for shelter. But mummified bodies have also been found in the cave, suggesting that the ancient Native Americans saw it as a sacred place that was suitable for the eternal rest of their dead. By 1200 BCE, the indigenous peoples were mining materials such as gypsum, mirabilite, and epsomite from the cave using mussel shells that they harvested from the nearby Green River. Archaeologists are still researching what those materials might have been used for, because apparently they're highly dissolvable and they don't tend to last too long outside the cave. So they kind of suspect that the ingredients were incorporated into medicine, agricultural practices, or trade, and possibly for ritualistic ceremonies. So eventually, around the year 200 BCE, all these mining practices stopped. And there, around that same time, evidence in the cave of the native peoples being there just kind of stopped. And no one really knows why they quit using the cave. But some of the descendants of the Native Americans that are still living in the area have said that their ancestors were driven away from the cave by evil spirits that live deep within it.
Mm.
So kind of a teaser to what Matt's going to talk about here. But I'll mention it again here in a minute, but there seems to be something about the deeper parts of the cave.
Yeah, it's interesting that they, like you said, they felt that it was sacred enough to be a final resting place, a safe place for their dead. So they must have had some inclination that there was something spiritual about it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not fully grasping what was truly going on there. And, you know, we're talking about limestone and flowing water. And as we've talked about before,
oh yeah,
you know, this is like a natural battery here as far as paranormal energy goes.
Right, right.
So when we're talking about that length of time, as the cave was forming and there was more water present, it could have led to much more activity, or even brought activity into the cave with the introduction of humans and, you know, the activities that went on there. It possibly could have disturbed something.
Yep, exactly. And what I think of when I hear the tales of their ancestors being driven off by something deep within the cave, you know, my mind always goes to like those ancient earth spirits, the elementals, the mm-hmm. whatever that have been around on this planet since time immemorial. And we've had different cultures speak of these creatures or spirits or whatever, and they're just inherent to the planet. And that's kind of what I think of when I think of something deep in a cave like that. Is it an ancient spirit that's been around for years, or maybe something that was banished to yeah. the depths of this cave and or banished to the depths of the earth, and the cave eroded away around it. And then all of a sudden, hey, I've got people in here now. I'm going to start screwing with these people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, something Cthulhu-like,
yeah,
you know, that's,
yeah,
you know, instead of being buried in the water, it's buried in the earth.
And, yep, exactly.
Yeah, big slumbering, you know, demigod, and all of a sudden there's people walking around.
Yep, walking around.
What's
and like digging in his cave, and he's like, come on, man, I was asleep. And then he wakes up and, you know, causes all sorts of hell. Now, this goes on to say that they use the mussel shells that they found in the Green River to scrape the soft mineral crusts off the wall into containers that they carried with them. And evidence of this activity can still be seen in thousands of artifacts that are found littered throughout the cave passages. Torches made from river cane were used to light their way, and unused caches of these artifacts can still be seen near the tour trails. Other artifacts, such as woven fiber sandals, gourd bowls, and even prehistoric cave art such as petroglyphs and pictographs, are visible on the underground routes used for their gypsum mining. So there's still, and I think this is cool too, that they just left them for you to see, but there's still evidence in these caves of the mining. And, you know, you had, I mean, you probably did this, if you don't still do it, but sitting somewhere at work and you doodle while you're sitting there. You know, some of these could just be workers doodling while having lunch or something in the cave. You know, some of them could be for the burial practices, because we know pictographs and everything were used in ancient burials and caves and stuff. So who knows what these could have been, but it's cool that they're still there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, this says that in the last 220 years, burials and the remains of desiccated bodies, so the bodies weren't intentionally mummified, they were placed in the cave, and then the ecosystem of the cave naturally mummified these bodies because of the constant temperature and the water content of where they were and all that, they naturally mummified in the cave, and they've been identified in these caves. They found them, and there were funerary objects associated with the burials that indicate a careful attention and respect for their dead. And the tools and clothing found in the remains prove that prehistoric people were experienced in cave exploration. So it wasn't like they were just haphazardly going down there. They knew what they were doing. They knew how to survive, and they knew how to get through the caves. Probably better than we do today.
Oh, yeah.
I would assume that they were just much better cavers, because they didn't have all the crutches that we have with carabiners and rappelling ropes and all that. They just knew how to do it.
You know, you lose a few and you begin to learn quickly.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We're not going to go this way.
Right, right.
This way is death.
Right. Joe we'll go, fell.
We'll go that way.
Yeah.
Make a note right here. Yeah. You come over there, and there's like a little upside down stick guy with lines coming up from
right,
it.
Right, right. And that's possible. Some of these pictographs in there could just be warnings. If you see this, don't go any further, because it gets bad down here. And then our dumb butts come through and we'll go, hey, look, pretty picture. And we just keep going.
Yeah.
You know.
Just keep right on walking.
Yeah. So this says that today the park has consulted with tribal partners so that the deceased have a safe and secure resting place in locations away from the cave tours. So they kept them in the cave, but they moved them respectfully away from the places that the tours are being led. So you don't have some jerk 13-year-old kid come through there poking a dead body with a stick.
Right. That's what I was thinking, you know, over touching it. You know,
yeah. Hey, look,
this little squishy piggy came off in my hand.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, right. Some teenager walking through, he's crunchy, man. Look, he. Now, One of the most fascinating discoveries, this says, made by archaeologists, indicates that some of the American Indians utilized the cave to actually prepare the bodies for burial. So not just burying them there, but they actually prepared the bodies there. Researchers found parts of 41 human skeletons at the Salt Cave campsite in the cave, and the sizes of these skeletons indicate that there were newborns and adults of both genders. Their bones were broken, split, and marked in the same way as deer bones, which is kind of fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
That they found evidence that the bones had been cut and stuff just like in deer bones. Now, it's said by many of the Native Americans that there were shamans and medicine people among the ones to have been buried in the cave. So it makes you wonder what kind of incantations, what kind of spells were done in and to this cave because of these shamans and medicine peoples that might increase paranormal activity or even start paranormal activity. Many of the ancient peoples and their the descendants today believe that deep within Mammoth Cave, in some of the parts that have yet been explored, there is actually a portal to the afterlife. And that's why these people were buried and prepared within Mammoth Cave. So that was one of the things I mentioned a minute ago that I want to talk about is there are 600 miles of this cave that we haven't explored yet. So there's, if you believe that there can be portals to the afterlife or portals in the earth to different dimensions, to whatever, then it is possible that one day exploring these caves, these explorers and researchers are going to find this thing that the Native Americans considered the portal to the afterlife. And so
what if it's like Stargate? You know, they get down, they finally find this big cave with this big giant circle.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta figure it out, open up this portal. It's been there this whole time and we never knew.
Well, if you remember, the Aztecs and everything in Mexico, they believed that the big sinkholes there, the name escapes me, but the sinkholes that are filled with water, they believed those were portals to the afterlife, and they would actually throw their dead and offerings into these caves, and, you know, it would sink, and now we're just kind of going diving, scuba diving in these things, and it's possible that in one of those too, deep within one of those where we haven't reached yet, that there is something like that. Because some of those caves there in Mexico were dry at the time of the native peoples being there, and they recently filled up with water. So they could have walked through them. So maybe they found something that we haven't found yet. And it's like Mammoth Cave. I would be willing to bet that the native peoples thousands of years ago actually made it further in these caves than we did. So what did they find there that made them believe that there was a portal to the afterlife? Was it an actual portal to the afterlife, or was it something, you know, some weird natural phenomena that we haven't experienced yet that made them believe it was a portal?
Yeah. Makes sense. I like that. I like that idea. You know, that you would think, unless it was just legend, and this is what we did, and they came up with stories to that were associated with why they buried someone in the cave, that they did potentially find something down there that made them believe that it was a portal.
Right.
It'd be interesting, you know, to continue to explore. I'm not going to do it.
No.
But, if I've got to get down on my hands and knees to get into somewhere and I'm already underground, I'm done. I'm not doing that. I'm with Adam. I don't want to get stuck.
And hands and knees aren't as bad as like flat out on belly trying to squeeze through something.
Yeah. You people that's how you get thrills is to go spelunking and get into these little crevices and stuff. You're crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, God love you. You are insane.
Yeah. You have a desire for a type of adrenaline rush that I do not have.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that.
I don't go through little tunnels into the earth, and I don't jump out of perfectly good airplanes.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Now, this goes on to say that by the time Western settlers and colonizers arrived thousands of years later, this part of the country was under the control of bands of Cherokee, Shawnee, and Chickasaw peoples. Now, here is the contemporarily recognized tribes that have an affiliation with the cave and the land that's around it. The Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians, the Cherokee Nation, the United Kituwa Band of Cherokee Indians, the Shawnee Tribe, the Eastern Shawnee Tribe of Oklahoma, the Absentee Shawnee Tribe, and the Chickasaw Nation. So all of these have some association and claim to the land there. Now, in addition to mining, Native Americans lived in rock shelters or large cave entrances during parts of the year. So dry conditions in the cave have preserved vast quantities of these artifacts that we were discussing, including some of the earliest evidence of organized agriculture in the United States. These part-time residents, they said, ate a variety of wild plants, including hickory nuts, lily, dandelion, strawberries, and acorns there. And when they could, they supplemented this plant-based diet with the deer, turkey, raccoon, and small mammals and stuff there. Now, moving ahead a little bit, in 1839, Dr. John Croghan purchased Mammoth Cave from a private owner. He believed the same cave environment that preserved these Native American mummies, the old timber that was in there, any dead animals, might actually save his tuberculosis patients' lives. So Matt and I were discussing this a little bit before we started recording, but that's just a wild thought to me. You know,
yeah.
Now, granted, we didn't have a good grasp of consumption or tuberculosis in 1839. So I can see some of it, but then it is kind of wild to me that you're like, this cave air might be good for you.
Well, yeah, it was widely thought that, you know, fresh air and open spaces and moderate temperatures were great for folks dealing with tuberculosis. That's why we saw so many of these tuberculosis hospitals built in these areas where they had a lot of open space. They were up on hills.
That's,
you know,
true.
They were very in very beautiful areas of the state. This kind of flips that on its head and says, now let's put them underground.
Right.
But the idea I can see, because, you know, the caves are a constant temperature. You know, you don't have the fluctuations in heat or cold. So it's a constant temperature, fairly constant humidity. But I just can't imagine that the lack of sunlight was doing anyone any favors.
Right, right. That's very true.
You know, you essentially isolated these poor people from the rest of the world by putting them in a cave.
Mm-hmm.
So I can only imagine what the mental aspect of this was. How hard it would be to accept that I'm sick enough that you're gonna put me in a cave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, and I would imagine there weren't too many people that were just signing up to go. I guess they were if they thought it was gonna cure them.
Yep. Yep. If they thought that was how to save their life.
Yeah, and Dr. Croghan was fairly confident in this line of treatment.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
because Krogan hypothesized that the cave air held the key, and he thought, like Matt was saying, that having his patients live inside the cave might actually save them. Now, by then, Mammoth Cave was already a tourist attraction, and visitors were treated to the strange sight of pale, frail figures in dressing gowns moving weakly within the cave, as well as the sound of coughing and soft conversations heard throughout some of the passages. And it says that that's possibly the origin of some of the early ghost stories related to the caves.
I'm sure.
And I think, okay, well, nowadays, you know, okay, let's say back then somebody saw a frail, pale tuberculosis patient walking through and they thought that was a ghost. My thinking is because they're there now, we would have a haunting because of that.
Mm-hmm.
This says that the air was unsuccessful in treating the patients and the experiment was called off after 5 of them died. Now, after death, they were placed on a slab of rock that is now known as Corpse Rock until they could be returned to the surface. So that's kind of creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Until they could pull them back out to the surface, they just laid them on this rock in the cave while other people are living in there and you've got tours coming through. The rock is still there today and people claim to have heard phantom coughing coming from that rock.
Oh, yeah. So, the cough.
Yeah. Now, many experts have said that they believe the number of deaths in and around Mammoth Cave are vastly underreported. And one reason is that some of the bodies were never found. So think about that. Matt and I have been jokingly kind of talking about our fear of not wanting to die in a cave getting stuck. But if you've got 600 miles unexplored, people go in there, try to explore, they get stuck with nobody else there, you're not going to find their body. You know, we haven't been there yet, so we're not going to find their body. So there, we may get down there in some exploration and find more relatively new bodies, you know, not the native peoples that were buried there, but explorers from 1800s, 1900s that got stuck in these caves and nobody knew about it. They just thought they disappeared. And we may find them still there. But it's just, it's crazy to me. Just crazy. Yeah.
Just crazy. You know, you can still actually see the little huts that were built for the tuberculosis patients.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the locations where, the sounds of coughing and conversations are mostly reported. But I mean, yeah, that's got to be a little bit eerie, you know, seeing that stuff, you know, seeing those essentially stone shacks where these people lived during this experiment. So, but with all that, there's bound to be some pretty good ghost stories that come out of this. And this first one is exactly that. There is a particular spirit that is known as Melissa. Okay. Now Melissa's spirit is alleged to haunt the cave. Melissa was a young woman whose love for her tutor was not reciprocated. And she decided that she had an opportunity to get revenge and abandon him in the cave without a lamp, and he was never seen again. Now, some say that Melissa's ghost still searches for him. I'm like, why? You know, you left him down there to die. Why go look for him now?
Right.
But rangers have reportedly heard a woman's voice calling from deep within the cave's labyrinth, as well as screams and garbled voices. However, more experienced researchers and rangers tend to just kind of laugh away these particular stories. But again, some people say that Melissa contracted tuberculosis. So she stayed in the cave and wound up dying there herself. There is a storyteller named Christopher K. Coleman, who he says that visitors may still hear Melissa calling out for her lost love, her doleful refrain, and her coughing telltale signs that her restless spirit roams the caverns still. Huh. But, you know, even still, others will report hearing a woman whispering or weeping in the cave. And these sounds are typically attributed to Melissa's ghost. But, I mean, could it be possible that, you know, they're hearing other things and just attributing that to a female spirit? Sure. Especially if Melissa never really existed.
Right.
I mean, there's no proof that she existed. There's no record of a tutor whose name was said to be William Beverly. And there's also no reports of anyone else who disappeared in Mammoth Cave during the 1840s. So it's really difficult to take this story as fact when there's no evidence at all.
Right. All right, Matt, so let's take a second and talk about one of our longtime sponsors, Care Of. Now, as you know, if you've listened to the show, we love Care Of. Care Of is a vitamin delivery service, so you can order your vitamins online and send them to you. And Care Of believes that you deserve to feel your best this summer. So from getting outside to enjoying your favorite seasonal dishes to taking a mental break, Care Of is here to help you take care of yourself all summer long. Care Of's convenient individual packets make traveling super easy. You just grab a few, one for each day you're gone, and your vitamin routine is set even when you're away from home. And we've talked about that before. That's one of my favorite things about it, is because I don't have to carry around bottles of all my vitamins with me. I just grab enough packets for the days and I've got them right there. It's amazing. And each shipment comes with a customized booklet showing you exactly what is in your individual daily packs and why it's recommended specifically for you and your health goals.
Yeah. So Care Of makes it extraordinarily easy, because I'm telling you, when you go to a vitamin store or when you're standing in the supermarket and you're looking at the supplements, there's so many, you just get lost, and everything tells you how great this is and you need to take it and, you know, live a better life. It's just overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to careof.com, you take an initial quiz, and it's not some in-depth health study. It's just, it asks you about what your health goals are. What are you interested in achieving? Why would you be interested in taking supplements? So you must want to gain something, and the quiz helps you kind of bring that out.
Right.
So when I took the quiz, it was, you know, I'm worried. I'm almost 50 years old. I'm worried about heart health. You know, I want to be alert and I want to focus, and I don't want to feel, you know, tired at 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I've still got a few more hours to work. So, I put all that in there. And two of the things that Care Of recommended for me were ashwagandha and rhodiola.
Yep. Ashwagandha, and, you know, man, I tell you, that is one with my herbalism stuff. That is a great, great herb. And I'm so glad that they have it, because most vitamin places don't have ashwagandha.
Right. And I think over the last few years, it's become more well known. But, you know, if you don't know, ashwagandha helps with stress and anxiety. It can help lower blood sugar. It can help build muscle and strength. And it sharpens focus and memory. So it's excellent. If those are the type of things you're looking for when you take the quiz, ashwagandha may pop up for you. Rhodiola, it's similar. It helps with fatigue, and it helps with mood elevation and brain function.
Mm-hmm.
All things that, you know, at some point in our lives we all become concerned about. So those were just two of the things that Kirov recommended to me. And Adam's right. It's so convenient. You get the little packets. It's personalized to you. In the morning, you don't have to worry about standing in front of your medicine cabinet with 15 bottles of pills. There are supplements that you have to shake out and count. And how, do I take two of these or one of these? Kirov's got you covered. All you got to do, open up that packet and dump them in your mouth and go.
Mm-hmm.
And it's ready for you the next day. You literally can't make this any simpler. So for Graveyard Tales listeners, you can get 50% off your first Care Of order. All you have to do is go to takecareof.com. That's TakeCareOf.com and enter our promo code GRAVE50. That's GRAVE50.
That's right. To get 50% off your first Care Of order, just go to takecareof.com and enter our code GRAVE50, GRAVE50.
But Melissa's story, a tragedy of the Mammoth Cave, appeared in the Knickerbocker in February of 1958. And the Knickerbocker was a publication that was kind of, it was similar to the New Yorker. Okay. You know, it had a lot of personal interest stories, a lot of fiction, things like that. And the story was published anonymously, which, you know, that enhanced the believability of it. But does that mean that all the reports are false? Because maybe this is just people's imagination going wild based on a story that came out, you know, in the similar era. Maybe. But if we take the whole story out of the equation of Melissa leaving her tutor in the cave without a light source and let him wander and die. If we remove that, the reports of the disembodied voices and the coughs are still there.
Right. Okay? Exactly.
So if it's not directly associated with this particular story, that's okay. I mean, how many places have we talked about that they develop a story based on the events that are occurring? You know,
right,
that's
right.
What we try to do. You know, if you're witnessing a disturbance, the first thing you want to try to do is find out why, who, what's the history here that would have caused this? Is there something to back up the fact that this place would be haunted?
And as humans, we don't like the unknown. We don't like the mystery. So
right.
If we have unknown sounds and an unknown haunting, we want to know why this place is haunted.
Right.
So we may create a story around a event,
yeah,
a haunting event. And you said, does it make it, you know, untrue just because this story can't be verified? No, but you've got, there are people out there that I have heard say, well, they are misinterpreting natural cave sounds for a haunting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll give you that if it's just somebody on a tour. But like you said in the beginning, there are park rangers, there are cavers, there are people that their job is to explore Mammoth Cave. And they know the sounds that happen in Mammoth Cave. So they would know the difference between a natural sound and a cough.
Right.
And they have heard it. They have experienced it. So some of it, yeah, it could be just natural cave sounds that some Joe Schmo walking through there heard and thought it was a ghost. But the ones from these cavers, I believe them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right. They would know the difference. All right, the next spirit that supposedly haunts Mammoth Cave is that of a man named Stephen Bishop. And Steven's ghost is the most commonly seen ghost in Mammoth Cave. And Bishop was the most famous guide that would lead people through the cave. Born around 1820, Bishop began exploring the cave in 1838. Now, in the spring of that year, his master, Franklin Gorin, had purchased the cave from its previous owner. Now, he wore a chocolate-colored slouch hat, a green jacket, and striped pants. Bishop would guide visitors through the cave, showing off its natural beauty and grandeur. But when not guiding tours through the cave, Bishop was exploring new areas and began the naming tradition that the park still holds today.
Hmm.
Now, Bishop was a lover of this cave, as he's described, and he would be a part of it even until his death in 1857. Now, according to author Nathaniel Parker Willis, Bishop was planning to purchase his and his wife's freedom and move to Liberia, which, if you remember, that was an African nation built by freedmen from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But this plan would never come to fruition. And although he would be freed shortly before his death in accordance with Frank Gorin's will. So when Franklin Gorin passed away, in his will, it was set up to release Stephen Bishop from his slavery. I mean, let's just call it what it is. I mean, you know, but he was supposed to be freed. But he died before he could get to Liberia, and Bishop was buried on a hill to the south of the cave entrance in what's now known as the Old Guide Cemetery. And today it's a part of the park grounds.
Right.
Stephen Bishop has been seen numerous times wandering the caves. Most often he appears as a fully formed apparition wearing a dark shirt, white pants, and a Panama hat. Now, supposedly he will on occasion join a tour group for a short time. And Adam and I were talking about stories that we had heard about this, about people mm-hmm. getting that feeling that their group just got a little bit larger.
Yep. They get that feeling somebody just joined their group.
Somebody
and
just
not just
up.
One of them. A couple of them, you know, conferred and they're like, yep, there's somebody else now that just joined our group.
Yeah. But apparently he doesn't say anything or make any noise. He just allows himself to be seen. Now, on occasion, he's also been known to blow out the flames of candles and torches that are used during tours. He's also been seen with the ghosts of a woman and two children. Now, no one is really sure who those people might be. But
lost spirits in the cave, maybe. He's just,
yeah.
You know, he was the the original guide. So It would make sense to me that he would still care for the people in the cave. And maybe he's trying to help these lost souls in the cave make their way through it.
Very good possibility. I mean, he's definitely not hostile. I mean, he's just there hanging out because he loves a cave.
Well, and I think it's really cool, before we get too far past it, that he started the naming tradition that is still used. I love that they didn't try to switch it up. They didn't try to change anything or whatever. They said, oh, he's been doing this. We're going to keep it that same way. Mm-hmm. And I like that.
Yeah, it's really neat. Now, this next one is Floyd Collins. Now, ever since he was a child, Floyd Collins was obsessed with the caves around his homeland in central Kentucky. And like a lot of his neighbors, became more obsessed with discovering new ones. Now, Mammoth Cave, of course, was the end-all and be-all of caverns. And it attracted tourists by the thousands since the early 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Collins was illiterate and maybe a little foolish to a degree, But he was admired by his neighbors as a man with a deep understanding of caves and how they worked. He was one of the first people, for example, to correctly argue that the caves around Mammoth weren't discrete caverns at all, but part of one vast system. So it's really not a stretch to say that Collins did in fact die in Mammoth Cave. He just wasn't in the main portion of it.
Right.
Now, Collins' biggest discovery was Crystal Cave. It wasn't huge, but it's beautiful. It's much smaller than Mammoth Cave, and it's harder for tourists to reach. Crystal Cave didn't make the Collins family a whole lot of money. So Floyd kept searching. When he did find a promising crevice on a neighbor's farm, he brokered a deal with the farmer to, you know, take a half on what he would discover. And so it was a Friday morning in late January of 1925. Collins, then 37 years old, crawled into what would be known as Sand Cave. Now, let's talk about Sand Cave for a minute and what Collins crawled into. For the most part, it is a damp, slippery little tunnel. For most of its length, the passage curls down into the earth and is smaller than an air conditioning duct and a hell of a lot twistier.
Not going to do it.
A lot more dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when the one lamp that he carried went out after several hours, Collins decided to head back to the surface. Now, he was squeezing through a particularly tight passage, and his hands were down at his sides when a rock fell on his left foot, pinning him. Now, it wasn't a big rock. They described it as being shaped like a country ham, and it weighed less than 30 pounds, but it was still big enough and heavy enough to hold him in there.
Well, and it probably wedged too, right. You know, it got wedged in a way that he couldn't get it loose.
Yeah. So now he's stuck, he's cold and he's wet, and he's screaming for help in pitch black darkness.
Nope.
This is why I don't go crawling around in caves.
Heck yeah.
It took almost 24 hours before he was found. And then all hell broke loose. Rescuers, some with experience, some not, just started piling in. And the attempts to get Floyd Collins out of the cave lasted 2 weeks.
And
ultimately involved family members, friends, state and local law officers, miners, stonecutters, college students, the National Guard, college professors, physicians, and reporters from all over the country. And one of those reporters was a William Skeets Miller, who was a 21-year-old reporter from the Louisville Courier-Journal, who not only interviewed Floyd, but tried as hard as anyone to free him. Can you imagine you're doing an interview with the guy that's stuck in a cave that you're trying to get out?
No, that's wild. Because
I'd be down there going, yeah, hey, reporter guy, shut up.
yeah, get me out of here. We'll talk when you get me out.
But Miller would actually win the Pulitzer Prize in 1926 for his reporting of this event.
Hmm.
I mean, this was like national news.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, this was a huge thing. Now, after 5 days and two collapses, the cave was impassable. So it cut Collins off from the outside world. Up until then, his rescuers were able to talk to him and bring him food and drink. Skeets Miller actually went down several times to interview Collins, but also, they said, shredded the flesh from his own hands trying to scoop the gravel away from Collins' body. Now, after the cave-ins, the shaft was the only option, but the digging was going so slow. And by the time they got to him on February 17th, he was dead. Now, understand, they started this on the 26th of January.
Yeah.
And they were finally able to get to him on the 17th of February. That is, ridiculously, it's terrible. It gives me anxiety just talking about it.
I know. Well, you know, you can, the body can live for 3 weeks without food, but it can only live for 3 days without water.
Right. Right. Once he was cut off.
Yeah. Give or take, probably a day or two, depending on your actual body and all that stuff. But, you know, it's the rule of threes, 3 weeks with no food, 3 days with no water.
Yep.
And I just, man, that, like you said, that is the thing that is in my head all the time and why I will not go spelunking and crawling through caves, because that is my fear.
Yeah. Now, Floyd's body was eventually removed from the cave after several years and interred in a family cemetery. Floyd's father, Lee, sold the cave and property to a local dentist named Thomas, who somehow obtained permission to exhume Floyd's body and put it on display in a glass-lid coffin at the entrance to Sand Cave.
What?
Where hundreds of tourists could gawk at his corpse.
Why?
That's what I said. Why? Why do this?
Yeah, that's...
The story, not enough, but hey, it gets weirder. Eventually, Floyd's body was stolen.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, and they think it was by rival cave owners who were angry at the amount of tourists that his body was attracting.
Oh, my Lord.
Oh, well, you got a dead body, you know, and everybody's coming to your cave to see your dead body. That's not fair.
Yeah.
So somebody stole it.
Good grief.
Now, after a few days, his body was discovered in a field, but he was missing one leg, and that was never recovered. So they put him back in his coffin, but they chained him in this time. And they took away the viewing lid. So they put a regular hard coffin lid, but still people could still lift it up and look inside.
Good grief.
I don't know.
Good grief.
That's weird, but anyway.
I don't get it. I don't understand why, you know.
No, nobody. People wouldn't do that.
Let the dead lie.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
just quit.
Just leave it.
You want a haunted cave? That's how you get a haunted cave.
The guy dies. You bury him when you finally get him out, and then you bring him back. Okay.
Yep.
Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. Now, the National Park System bought Sand Cave in 1961, and they closed it to tourists, but surprisingly, they didn't give Floyd a proper burial until 1989.
Surprisingly, I am not surprised. But the way these people have been acting, I'm not surprised.
It's kept him around for almost 30 more years. What? Okay. But when they did that, he was buried in a plot in the Mammoth Cave Baptist Church Cemetery. And yes, it's said that his spirit also haunts the church.
I would, too.
Yeah. He was, man.
Look what you did to me. Yeah.
My leg and everything. I'm going to hop around here.
You got my leg lost because you left me out here. Now I'm only one-legged. And if I find my other leg, I'm going to beat you with it.
Now, in the areas that are associated with Floyd's death, his voice has been heard calling for help and objects have been thrown. And it should be noted that in recent decades, Floyd's caves have indeed found to be connected to Mammoth Cave. So he was right.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout other areas of the cave system, apparitions have been seen, usually of African Americans, which were the cave's earliest tour guides and explorers. Okay? So these people would use African-American slaves to go down and explore the cave and then serve as guides.
Right.
That's the whole, I'm not going down in there.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I'm not either. So, yeah, nice move. But many of those African-American slaves would hold church services with their families inside some of the chambers within the caves. Now, as we've said, Mammoth Cave National Park is home to an incredible variety of things to see. And one of those is this huge amount of seasonal wildflowers due to the abundance of the forest habitats. Mm-hmm. Now, although not inside the cave, the best area for seeing the amazing colors and flowers and everything is Cedar Sink. Now, Cedar Sink is an area where the underground rivers briefly emerge before soaking back into the ground. And in an article by J. Nathan Couch, the author details his paranormally uneventful tour of the caves, but relates a strange experience while hiking the Cedar Sink Trail. Now, Couch reports that while his wife was trying to identify some particular flowers, he suddenly and clearly saw a woman's face about 3 feet from the trail. He said the woman appeared to be Caucasian, or at the very least, fair-skinned. She seemed to be in her late 20s or early 30s. Her hair was long and black, which she wore up in a bun, with one singular curl hanging down on her forehead. Her skin was pale gray, her nose was thin, and her chin was angular. He said the face was solid, but appeared flat and one-dimensional. So she wasn't ethereal. He wasn't like seeing right through her. It was as if there was a solid image there.
Like a cutout on a piece of paper.
Yeah. Yeah. Like those things they have at basketball games. You know, they cut some big giant head of a dude.
The big heads thing. Yeah.
That's what he saw, was like a fat head. he said that she had a disinterested look on her face. But he said that was reminiscent of the faces from 19th century photographs. It was a time when people didn't really smile for pictures. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A Couch states that he saw the face only for a second, but that it was so vivid, he continues to ponder on it, placing this experience only second to his trip to Waverly Hills Sanatorium.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty creepy. And like I said, it wasn't in the cave, but it's still within the park and it's close by. So if all of this activity is going on in and around the cave, it just makes sense that the entire park would have some level of activity because of the limestone and the water that's underneath.
Nothing says the hauntings have to be relegated to within the cave.
Right.
You know, it's a cave system, so any of it could, I mean, they could travel anywhere.
Yeah. Now, a few other little interesting stories that are tough to verify, but fun. There is a story of researchers finding a ringing telephone near Floyd Collins's coffin in 1961.
Well, that's weird.
I mean, so it wasn't like, you know, because when I heard this, the first thing is, somebody dropped a cell phone in there. Well, it's a pre-cell phone. Okay. Yeah. It's 1961. Somebody had actually installed a phone over there by the coffin. Okay. But the researchers show up and the phone is ringing. Okay. So surprised by this, they kind of decide they're going to follow the phone line and see where it goes. And so it goes, they follow it all the way back up to the visitor center. And the phone line has been cut.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, but yet it's ringing.
Why didn't they answer it first?
That's what I said. Why wouldn't you answer it? Answer a ringing phone, even if you don't even know. You know, you know, it could have been Ed McMahon on the other side going, you've just won.
Yeah, just in case. You never know.
Now, another one of these stories that's, you know, virtually unverifiable, tells of phantom whiskey bottles that would fall in front of National Park Service employees in the area where Floyd Collins' coffin was. So, like, he was throwing whiskey bottles at him.
That's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. Why, you know? Well, Floyd's like, leave my body alone. You know, last time y'all came around here, I lost my leg. And
yeah, no kidding.
Now, visitors also share some creepy experiences as well as the Rangers do. But Rangers have reported feeling a hand on their shoulder when going to turn the lights on after the blackout portion of one of the tours. So this, I was telling Adam before the show, I've taken this particular tour where you go down, you get way down into this chamber, and then they tell you that you're going to experience what it would be like if you were exploring this cave, you know, in the early days. And they turn the lights off. And it is the blackest black I've ever experienced in my life. I mean, there is no light. You can't see anything. You can't see something. You could put your hand right in front of your face. You wouldn't be able to see it. You wouldn't be able to make out anything. It is that black. And it only lasts for about 30 seconds, but it's one of those things you can just feel the darkness on you.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But so the Rangers have said when they reach to turn the light back on, they actually feel something touch their shoulder in that process. Like, you know, don't turn the lights back on. Other people report being physically shoved during the blackout period. And one story from a cave explorer tells of a ghostly hand that grabbed her as she started to fall while exploring the cave.
Hmm. That could have been the tour guide.
Yeah.
Helping her out.
Stephen Bishop reaching out, you know, grabbing onto somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like I said at the beginning of the show, and Adam reiterated it, the Rangers, they don't advertise the fact that this is haunted. Okay. This is not a part of the regular tour that they're going to discuss the ghost stories and everything. Even without that, it's amazing. And there's, when I went the last time, there was, I don't know, probably 5, 6, 7 different tours you could take at different skill levels. And the couple that I did were a lot of fun. They were very, very safe. I told Adam at no point did I feel like I'm not going to make it out of here. I mean, you know, it's well lit. There's handrails. I told him, you know, one of the tours we took, there's been so many people walking down these rocks, it's smoothed out. So it's almost like a sidewalk just going down.
Yeah.
So it's not bad. There are some that are more challenging. But that blackout portion of that one particular tour is really cool. So if, you know, if you're in that area, okay, if you live in that area of Mammoth Cave and you've never taken a cave tour, you're doing yourself a disservice. You know, this is a not just a national wonder. I mean, this is a world wonder. I mean, it's the largest cave system that's known. Take advantage of that and go visit it. Ghost stories aside, just go and experience this because it's like seeing the Grand Canyon. I mean, this is a natural wonder. But the fact that it may indeed be haunted could make it a little bit more fun. If you're going in there with the idea that you may experience something a little out of the usual for a tour like this.
Right. And something I was going to mention that we talked about before we started recording, but we haven't mentioned yet. I heard an interview with one of the cave explorers that maps the new portions of the cave.
Mm-hmm.
And we briefly touched on it when we said that somebody joined their party. But this caver guy, I don't know exactly what his title is, but he had a team.
Caver guy is a good title.
All right, caver guy it is.
I want mine to be.
Yeah, caver guy on a little patch on your shirt.
Yeah.
He said that him and his team of 3 other people, so there's 4 of them, they were just moving into an unmapped area of the cave. And when they got in there, he said, all of a sudden, I felt a fifth person join our group. And I turned to one of my coworkers and I said, did you feel the person that just joined the group? He said, yeah, it feels like there's now a fifth member to our party. And shortly after that, they saw a dark shadow figure move along the wall of the cave, and it wasn't their shadows. And they apparently, every time they move into a new area, they get this same feeling that somebody joins their group, they see a shadow figure, and then they hear weird noises.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's these are experienced cavers, so they know the sounds of the cave there. So they know it's not cave sounds, it's coughing or it's wailing or it's whispering or something. But it seems to happen every time they move into a new portion of the cave, which I thought was very interesting, because it could be either one of the tour guides like Bishop or something that is joining them mm-hmm. to help lead them through this new portion. It could be the spirits of people buried there back in prehistory, or it could be something to do with the further they get down, the closer they get to this supposed portal down there, and they're just experiencing more of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's really interesting to think about these kind of stories and the people that are referenced in them, because they had such an influence on how the history of the cave developed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Stephen Bishop being, you know, one of the first guides for that cave, Floyd Collins being, you know, just a regular guy that became so enamored with the caves, you know, that, you know, he couldn't stop exploring to find new caves, new entrances, and theorizing that he was looking at one big giant cave system, and turns out he was right. I mean, those right. are fascinating stories, and the fact that their spirits linger around that cave, I think is pretty apropos.
Yeah.
You know, this was a huge part of their life, and I think it continues on after their death.
Sure.
So, you know, like I said, Mammoth Cave is a pretty awesome place. Love to go camping up there. You know, it's always fun. But the next time I go now, you know, those cave tours are going to be a little bit more interesting.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So on that note, I'm going to say if you live in the area, if you've had a weird experience in and around Mammoth Cave, in the cave or in the park, let us know. And mm-hmm. the best place to let us know is in our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook and search Graveyard Tales. You'll find the link to the group. We have a lot of folks that share personal experiences in there. It is a safe place. No one's going to make fun of you. We all just want to hear great stories. And it is a private group. So what you post in there is going to stay in there.
Right.
You know, you're not going to, you know, show everybody else, you know, that you had an experience that maybe scared the pants off of you, and you're worried somebody's going to call you a loony. It's not going to happen. Not in the graveyard.
Right.
Okay. And while you're at it, you can go check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can learn a little bit more about Adam and myself. You can listen to the show, and you can become a patron. And we thank everyone who has donated their hard-earned money to the work that Adam and I do. It really helps us keep it going. So I think that's it for Mammoth Cave. Adam, you yep. got anything else?
I got nothing else.
All right, brother. Until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.